Thank you for tuning in to Sisters, where we discuss lifestyle, love with lots of laughs. We're your hosts, B and Z, Bree.
Hey.
Nicole.
What's going on?
And Zahira, that's me. So, oh my God, it feels good to be back with you ladies. It's been a little minute. And we're like on the tail end right now of Black History Month, right? So we feel an extra Blackly Black week. Extra, extra.
That's nice.
Girl, I have like 40s.
Oh, okay.
Because not only are they cute, but they comfortable, you know? We were just talking about that, you know, it's a couple little, the COVID pounds is like extended into 2022. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can still blame it on it anymore, but that's neither here nor there, girl. So speaking of Black History Month, what Black shows have y'all been watching? Like Black characters, Black whatever, producers, whatever. What Black shows are going on right now?
Well, I could say I've been watching a lot of reality TV because that's my guilty pleasure. So, you know, a series called Ready to Love. I watched that. Women of the Movement. I actually watched Madea's Homecoming last night. You know, sometimes a movie's a little fuzzy, but I actually enjoyed that one a little bit.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday morning. It was it good? It was. You know, it's always messy. It always got some twists and turns. But it was funny. It was like an upbeat show to watch. Like
exactly. And I like how she incorporated like Black Lives Matter and some other things in there. So it was some real, you know, deep like messages in it. So I have to say, this is one of the better ones of hers that I enjoyed. Hers, like it's really a real person.
Right. Hey, that's why I've been boycotting them, because this whole Madea thing, I was like, I can't take no more. The Boo Halloween thing, I was like, I can't do it. But now I'm glad to hear it's good. Yeah. You saw it too, Bree?
Yeah, I did. I saw it yesterday morning. Me and Levi watched it. It was good. It was like funny, but they had those serious conversations in there, like Nicole said, like where they incorporate Black Lives Matter in the conversations. And I've noticed that a lot of shows are doing it now. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Even Law and Order SVU, that's not a Black show.
Yeah.
But when I tell you that they have been Blackity Black Black since like the pandemic, they're constantly talking about like the police reform issue.
Yeah.
All of that. I have to commend the writers. Like sometimes I'm like, dang, they're gonna put it on every episode. Like by the way.
In every
episode. I'm like, okay. I mean, hopefully it's leading to good conversations, you know, in households. Like, what does this mean?
But you know what? It's really putting that conversation in households that would never have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't have a conversation about it, at least they're hearing it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Putting it in their face, which is important.
Mm-hmm. I think the opposite of that is you mentioned Ready to Love, Nicole, and we watched it. So we did our whole little Huntsville retreat.
Okay, I have not seen Ready to Love, so tell me about it.
Okay, Brie. Nicole, you want to go first? Because you put me onto it.
Is it a reality show?
It's a reality show.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And it's hosted by nephew Tommy. So because, you know, he's had a successful marriage for so long. He's kind of like, I would say like the mentor, you know, he talks to the women and the men. And like they go to different cities and it's all Black men and women. Which I think is important. And they talk about and they set up different scenarios, like how they'll have more women than men on the season, because in actuality, that's really how it is sometimes in a dating pool. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they're all successful, you know, Black men and women, which I like as well. And they basically just, you know, go out on different dates and, you know, they vote each other off, you know, whether it's one week it's focused on voting off a man, then the next week it may be a woman, but, you know, they incorporate them meeting their families, which I think is important, you know, their friends and sometimes their exes. And I think, you know, it helped me learn a lot, you know, in terms of dating, like things that you don't ever think of sometimes asking, you know, when you're dating, or sometimes certain concessions that I used to be so, you know, hell bent on not, you know, making, but it really makes you start to think like, you know, what you want or what you need may not always necessarily look like what you think it is. So I like it, but this season I'm not here for it at all.
It's very intentional.
Go ahead.
Okay, so before we have to tell you what's wrong with this season, we gotta tell you what's right, what's been right in the past, right?
Okay.
So first of all, they do a really good job of making the singles intentional. Like, you only have a little bit of time and you meet a lot of people. So you have to have very intentional conversations, like learning about people's backgrounds. They have very diverse people. So like you have people who, you know, are in IT, or you have people who are in cosmetology or this or that or that. some people are divorced, some people have children, some people don't, like, you know, very different, diverse age range. Just, they kind of keep it, bless you, girl. Girl, you all right?
well, you know, when I gotta sneeze more than once, so.
Got it. See, that's good, like, coming threes. But, so, you know, they generally are like in the 30s and 40s age range, so they try to keep them adult, but it's just interesting. And then also being in a space where, you know, a lot of times people encourage you, like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. So we've seen it where people do that. They come in and they lock in and they decide to do it and they don't get the full experience of dating and learning new people. And then you have some people who really take advantage of the process. But this season, I don't know if it's the singles or what is going on, but they're in DC, right? They're in DC this year. So they just, you know, one woman in particular, when she was getting eliminated, so they eliminate very respectfully. I have to say that, like, it's not like one of those shows where it's cutthroat. They have a full conversation of, okay, like, they meet as a group. Like, let's say they're eliminating a woman that week, right? Mm-hmm. They have the gentleman circle, and they have a full conversation on, okay, why are you feeling this person? Why are you not feeling this person? And it's never like surface stuff. It's not like, oh, she ain't cute, or, like, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you know, her family background doesn't align with mine, or like sexual history. Like, there's some people come in there and they want to be abstinent the whole time. Like, they want to be abstinent till marriage. People have other, you know, ideologies. So they get really into it. So when they do eliminate the person, they have a conversation with them and they say, like, look, like, this is why, where you're not connecting with people. So it's an opportunity for you, if you're receptive, to grow. Like, you know, and most of the people who are dating you are saying the same thing, is something that you should probably pay attention to. So there was this one girl who was getting eliminated in the season, and she was so nasty about it. Like, the guy brought her on a date and was a gentleman about being real with her. And she was just like, that's BS. So you could see people who are just not ready to love. Like, and so that's what they said to them. Like, we just think you're not ready to love right now. So, but this, the cast. Mm.
Yeah.
So it's the cast for the next season. But for this, it is going on right now.
It's just going on right now. And, you know, for me, because, like, I feel like we already have enough shows where, you know, we're looked at, you know, a certain type of way. And, you know, I really feel like the first two seasons really brought out the best in people. And you saw the genuineness in them and, you know, wanting to be in love. Like, a lot of us are. But it's like, you know, I'm finding it hard to see the genuine intentions of a lot of people on this season.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Some of those connections were like brought you to tears because you watched the whole journey of, like, really genuinely falling in love with somebody. And then getting to talk, like, they would do a reunion afterwards, right? And you get to see if they're still together, if they're not still together. And it's a space, well, used to be, I think, before this season. We'll see. The jury's still out. But I like the fact that they were accountable. Like, the men will hold other men accountable. Like, there was one guy who broke up with a girl and it was really disrespectful and it was just really bad. And when the reunion came, I mean, they let him have it, and it was the men letting him have it. So I feel like it's a space to teach, like, these are kind of the things that we're missing in the dating world. But this season might be a miss because I'm already like three episodes behind. I never am three episodes. Usually it's like waiting, like, okay, what's going on? So, all right, what else y'all watching?
I've been watching Bel-Air. I just started watching that. That was good.
Yeah, no, that I binge watched in one day because I just I think it's amazing because, you know, a lot of times when you remake a show, you're just like, oh, you know, but I like how they kept a lot of the true elements of it, but they still made it different. And I think it's more, you know, relatable to, you know, our kids, like, you know, so I don't know, there's Levi watching it. I know Kennedy, you know, she's still a little, jury's still out, but I think it's an awesome show where, you know, you can watch it with, you know, younger people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, and you bring in the two worlds together, the past and the present. So.
Yeah. Levi watched the first three episodes with me, and he was downstairs talking to his friends yesterday. So I watched the last two, like, you know, 4 and 5. He came up here and he was mad.
Right.
I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were that interested. So I'm gonna watch it with him again.
So wait, I haven't seen it. So tell me, I know it's Will Smith, based off of like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but I hear it's very different. Like, what is the premise of the show?
I mean, the premise is the same, but I feel like there are some differences. So, like, you know, Jazz's character, whereas before he was like, you know, kind of like just flighty, you know, dumb, didn't really have much going on. This new character is like really, you know, instilling wisdom in Will, and even the new Hillary, like she has a lot of business ventures. She's like an entrepreneur, whereas the old Hillary like kind of used her looks or, you know, whatever to get ahead. So I like that about this season where they, you know, didn't, you know, keep true to the old, you know, sitcom, but it still has the main elements. And I think it's just, you know, and Carlton, you know, I don't know how you feel about him, Sabrina, but I'm just like, I don't like
him. Wait, the Carlton, you know, character is different too? So
he's still cornball, but he's just taking it to a new level. So, you know, we don't want to spoil it for you, but definitely.
He corny. Like, I didn't know it got cornier than Alpha.
And then, and you know, when someone's jealous, when someone's jealous of someone else and like they go out their way to try to really, you know, cause harm to them. And there's this one situation where he really could have stepped in and like chose family and just, mm-mm. So, he's a
villain, basically. They go deeper into the characters. Mm. And correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, Fresh Prince, that was many, many years ago. But does this show go a little bit more into why he got sent to Bel Air?
I think it does. Because like I said, we didn't get all that. Because I'm like, no. Man, because if this was really the case, I understand. Before, we kind of just like, he showed up at the door with his bags. And he was like, we understand he got in trouble at the courts. But we didn't know like to that degree. So I do like how it kind of went more into depth, like why he went there and how it was really a hard decision for him to even still choose to stay in Bel Air, you know, at the sake of losing, you know, people in his life. So.
Oh, wow. So they go into the whole history of how he got, you know, the West Philly, born and raised, like the born and raised part.
Right. Yeah. This show actually starts in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, nice.
Yeah. And then you see him get put on the plane. Like it was, it's deep. It's really good.
All right, I'm gonna have to check it out. It's on Peacock, right?
Yeah.
So y'all, one of y'all just send me a login or whatever. So
we'll think about it. Because I'm like, that seemed like a little legal saying it on this tape. So I don't know.
No, it's
that.
Not. Because I'm gonna watch it at your home, dog.
Oh, okay.
You sound a little snitchy. I'm not sure, but
you put it out there in the world now, okay?
A little snitchy. It's fine. You know, whatever, Dr. Scott. No judgments. But, oh, you mentioned, did y'all get to see Women of the Movement?
Yes, did get to see it.
It's like, you know the story, but it's just like, dang. Like,
yeah, that's something else that went more into depth. Like, you know, we all know the story, but to see, like, you know, all of that she went through and just to see how really strong she really, you know, was, because we knew, you know what I'm saying, but to see to that level, it's just like, wow, it was really inspiring. You know, I think I'm gonna do all the emotions watching it, angry, sad, you know, hopeful, you know, it just really, they really did a good job with that. They really did.
So this is the story of Emmett Till, but focusing on his mother, Mimi Till. I think them, you know, this is Diddy, right? Diddy and Will Smith produced this and put this together. But I think I'm hoping the anthology is going to continue and they'll focus on someone else. But I feel you, Nicole, like the whole array of emotions that you go through and the fact that they even slipped in a love story, like in it, even though, you know, this is a major tragedy. We're talking about, you know, facing all kinds of level of not just disrespect, but serious, blatant, hateful racism. Like, I mean, even the whole, I remember the scene when the body is sent home and she's seeing the body for the first time. And it's like the amount of strength as a mother to view your child in that condition, you know, having been in the water for days, and you see her touching each part of his body and remembering, like, I think it was his ear or his hand or something from the moment he was born. Like, it was just,
Well, I think that really speaks to a conversation of why did it take so long for this to be shown? Like, why do you think it took so long?
That's a good question.
I think it's a lot, you know. For one, I think it takes someone being that bold and audacious, you know, to put something like that out there. You know, shockingly enough, there were still a lot of people who didn't even know who Emmett Till was, you know, just watching on social media and people not even knowing. So, yeah, I'm too, was like, dang, like, why it takes so long for something like this to happen? But you know what? Like you said, the more that people continue to normalize this, to put it out there, you know, to the public, you know, I think that it will become, you know, more of a common thing. But, you know, it just sucks that we're still in 2022, still having a lot of our first, you know, where something like this was even done. So, but it's like, I'm still trying to remain hopeful that, you know, more of these type of things would happen, but it's just like, it's crazy. Just like this, I'm going off tangent, but the Supreme Court appointee, like this fact that we're still having these firsts in 2022, it's just like, it's crazy.
Shout out, Judge Jackson.
For real, yes, yes. But no, the reason why I mentioned that was in my head, like I thought about that question for a while. And the story was so horrible, and it speaks to every single family, no matter what color, because no mother wants their child to go through that. And in my mind, it took so long to come out because it speaks to something horrible that can't be covered up. And we like to talk about Black history and say Black history facts. However, that's a story that hurt. Like, it really hurt, and it can hurt anybody that actually has a child. So it's like, I feel that sometimes we like to soften Black history. Like, yeah, Harriet Tubman, she did get these slaves out. But as long as we leave it basic in general, we don't tell the stories underneath, the stories that'll make you feel like they really hurt. And I feel like that's why it took so long, because nobody can really say that should have happened. No, like, we're really just starting to have this movement where, listen, this is what happened. You're white, this is what happened, it doesn't matter.
But here's the thing, as we're getting this, like, movement toward finally telling the truth, then you have a whole other set of people who want to hurry up and cover it up again. Like, actively trying to, so it's like a whole combative thing going on right now, because... And I have to shout out younger people, because I feel like the reason why that happened is because the generation, even below us, like us and below, of every race, they're not having it anymore. Like, they don't want to cover up those conversations. They don't want to cover up the realities and the atrocities of this country. And I feel like we're the only country that does that. Like, there's there's not been a nation or a land that doesn't have bloodshed or doesn't have, you know, some terrible things in their history, and they make it part of their tapestry. Like, they, you learn about, we're the only space that seems to just really want to whitewash it and act like it never happened. And basically just say, okay, we're in 2022. Now let's get over it, but never addressing it. While telling people to go to therapy. The exact reason for therapy is because you want to address the traumas of your past.
You have to.
And then, but they're telling us, get over it. Like, which one is it? Like, I'm confused.
And that's why I'm loving some of the work of our generation today, with Resma, with My Grandmother's Hands, the book that he wrote, Robin DiAngelo with White Fragility, Rachel Carl, who brings to light white feminism is a white woman's movement because it does not include everyone. And we're really fighting this battle firsthand, and it's amazing. Because listen, white people have to accept that trauma too. You did it. It's in your face. Now, what are we going to do about it? Because we both have to heal from it. And what are you going to do about it to make it better? So I think we're really doing some stuff.
It's hard not to heal when people take ownership. Like, it's hard not to heal that way.
Exactly. Like, that's what it is, ownership.
The thing that's making it so difficult is the denial. You know, if people just came and said, you know what? This did happen. We're sorry. We may not have been the contributors to it, but we are benefiting from it.
Exactly.
That's a reality. And we're sorry. And that we can keep it moving. You know, like, we can start growing and healing and existing together.
Exactly.
But is it going to happen? I don't know.
Not holding my breath on that one at all. but all we can continue to do, I'm just being honest. And, like, you know, the more that I do work in, like, you know, implicit bias and, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, there's always going to be a group of people like, you know, I'm just not going to apologize for something that I had no part in. And, you know, this whole white privilege thing, people really think it's not a real thing. And like, in my mind, it's just like, you know, so as long as we continue to have people who think like that, and I just don't know, like I said, maybe hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, once we're, you know, we're came and gone, but I just know in this lifetime, you know, it's just unfortunate, but all I know is that we just have to still continue to operate in our spaces and do what we can, you know, in the moment. If we can bring more people, you know, over and, you know, help them learn and recognize that, yes, this is a real thing, then, hey, that's all we can do is what we can do and what's in our control. And like I said, if I could just, you know, do these, you know, trainings and I bring one or two people, then I did my job. But, you know, as far as, like, just thinking, yes, we got 100% agreement that white privilege is real and we're really going to work. I don't know. I don't see that.
And you know what? I don't even think I care about the apology. You ain't got to apologize to me for nothing. What you can do, you can go to your place of employment. You look at your policies and make sure they are equitable. Mm-hmm. You can work with your lawmakers, council people. You can send petitions. You can do stuff like that. Look at them and make sure they're equitable. You don't got to apologize to me for nothing.
Just acknowledge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge. Yeah. Just make sure it's equitable now.
It's like relationships, right? When people keep saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And there's no change behavior. I think we just want to change behavior. Right. We just
want the apology means the nothing. End result. Closure. Yeah. Just be better. Be better.
I'll take an apology too, though. I ain't gonna lie. I'll take an apology and change behavior.
You can apologize first, okay?
Let me tell you something. I was on a board meeting, okay? And I'm not going, it's one of the nonprofits that I sit on. And I actually had to sit through, and I'm the only person of color on the entire executive board. Shocker. But I just couldn't believe there was someone who was a fellow board member who said something so, so disturbing to me in this meeting. You know, our executive director is trying to incorporate, you know, bias training, all those kind of things. And she was opposed to it because she said she didn't want to sit in spaces where she's made to feel bad about being Caucasian. And I said, welcome to my life. I sit in spaces every day where I'm made to feel less than, different, whatever, because of the color of my skin. And the crazy thing is that how is inclusivity somehow a threat to your whiteness? It's not. Like, but I feel like, you know, and I've had this conversation with, you know, Caucasian friends and things like that. Like, it's not acknowledging the realities of what I'm going through is not diminishing the realities of what you go through. Like, one doesn't have to exist without the other. You can be white and be proud in your whiteness and be proud of your culture, your, you know, what you've gained culturally from, you know, your ancestry or whatever, without somehow me being proud of what I am affecting that. Like, I don't understand how those two things, but I feel like they see it as an attack sometimes. And I, you know, generally some people who are opposed to having, like, you know, cultural awareness training and education in their school systems, they see it as an attack on their whiteness. And it's like, no, if you feel that, maybe there's something to explore there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I agree too.
Women of the movement. So you named some, you just rattled off some people, Sabrina. Like, you gotta, let's circle back. What is this? You told us one person in particular. I think you, what was her name? Rachel
Cargill.
Okay, Rachel Cargill. And she's a white feminist, or she's against white feminism. I couldn't.
She kind of speaks to how white feminism, like, there's different aspects. It's that. Now, I just learned about her last week, to be honest, and I'm a little ashamed of that because I talked to a couple of people and they already knew who she was. So I was like, wait, what? So I really just started watching YouTube videos. So I feel like I can't give her any justice. Mm-hmm. Like, I just know that she speaks to aspects around this. Like, I'm going to butcher the quote, but the quote was about how white tears are not more important than black lives. Mm-hmm. And she just does work around that. Like white, I equate Robin DiAngelo of her white fragility. I kind of tie it into that, but like I said, I don't want to butcher her work because I'm really just learning about her. But to me, she seems really awesome.
Mm. She sounds like she's resurrecting the work of Shirley Chisholm. Because back in the, talking about women of the movement, you know, she started with the feminist movement at first until she realized that they were competing because, you know, the feminist movement was very much for white women, you know, to sort of become, not become part of the patriarchy, but kind of become equal with the patriarchy. And we know the patriarchy is white patriarchy. So there's no room for black women in white patriarchy. It just doesn't work. So Shirley Chisholm is the first one. She kind of got burned by it. Because she was a part of the feminist movement at first. And then when she wanted to run for president, you know, she realized kind of that where they were competing values there, and she didn't really have the support from the feminist movement that she thought she did.
Yes.
I don't know. Oh, shout out to Ray Fisher too. Ray Fisher started Women of the Movement as Jean, right? That was Mamie's ended up being her husband, but at the time, I think in the way the film was done, it was her
boyfriend.
Yeah. Suitor. Mm-hmm. However they call it. But Ray Fisher's from Longside. He grew up with us.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Went to high school with us. I think the first time we saw him acting was in high school. Like he was the only Black person in drama that I remember.
Well, it paid off. So
it did. He was good too. He was good. He had a voice. He could sing. He could dance. So the first time we got to see him act was as Cyborg in the DC Comics films. And now he was Gene. He did a good job. He did a good job as Gene. Mm-hmm. From Little Old Longside, historically Black Longside.
Mm-hmm. Longside, New Jersey.
But yeah, so, I mean, like we said, we're kind of on the ending of Black History Month, though, you know, Black History is 365. But just considering like where we are in the space, you know, by the time this episode airs, we'll be technically in March. But what are like some of y'all thoughts about Black History Month? Black History, like, did you do anything particularly special? Did you do anything to celebrate? Like, you know, kind of what are your closing thoughts about this month and, you know, the fact that we get to celebrate ourselves 28 strong days, you know, shortest month, but whatever.
But whatever. Didn't do anything particularly different. However, I just think it's always good to reflect on our greats, the people that paved the way for us. And I really think we're living in a time where our generations are really picking up social justice work and moving it to a whole nother level. So I'm in appreciation.
That's dope.
Yeah, I also agree. Not that I did anything extra. Like I said, I get the Black History facts from my father, like, you know, all the time, almost every day.
I love them.
Like I said, little festivals here and there. But like I said, my dad always says, like, you know, Black history is American history.
Exactly.
So I just always want to urge people to make sure that, you know, you're learning about yourself, your culture, you know, 365, because it's important. And like I said, I'm just so empowered by the younger people. I have to shout out, I think her name's Lene, and she goes by Lenezy on IG, and she does parking lot pimping.
Yes.
On Fridays, and she's always like, I'm gonna keep it Black, but I'm gonna keep it brief, keep it Black. I don't know. I just love how she,
keep it Black.
There you go. And how she, you know, talks about a lot. And I think that's what we need, more people like her that keeps it relatable for the younger generation, you know, because the going to the days of, you know, you're sitting in class and you're just learning about, you know, history, you have to make it where it's relatable. And I think she did an amazing job with, you know, growing her following and being able to talk about the tough, you know, topics that a lot of people don't want to talk about. I think she was also nominated for an NAACP Image Award. Or so, you know, I think that's just, and that's what just gives me hope. That, you know, the kids who are younger than us, you know, are really making it, you know, easier and providing better access for, you know, the younger generations to learn more about themselves.
Yeah. You know what? I wanted to speak on this. Okay. There's a concept called, especially if you have younger kids, there's a concept called positive racial socialization. And I have also heard of it as positive racial identity development. Mm. That's important in our areas. That's important in our communities. And it's because you put these things into, we happen to go to Longside. Me and Z grew up strong in Longside, Black history all day. A lot of Black children don't have that.
Yeah.
It's important to build those concepts in them when they're younger. And it's been proven in urban environments where there is a high crime rate, high poverty, that if you use elements of positive racial socialization, statistics get better because you're telling them, listen, you do great. You come from greatness. You can have greatness. And it's really important for our families to do this. And that's something I'm learning about too. And I'm like, no, yeah, we need to be doing this because schools are not going to teach everything.
No.
And they need to know, like, listen, the race is positive. I don't care what happens when you walk outside, what you see, what you got to pass on your way to school. You come from this. You come from this. You can be this. You can do that. And just show avenues of greatness all the time to combat what's outside.
Agreed.
That's such a great point. And I think that requires us to also educate ourselves.
Exactly.
because, you know, how do we impart it if we don't know it? And we do take that for granted. Like, you know, I think we forget we grew up in a predominantly Black town that mm-hmm. wasn't like an inner city Black town. It was like suburban Black town. Yeah. We got to see examples of Black professionals. Like, this is like, yes. you know, I grew up in Brooklyn. So I kind of had both the examples of it, you know, growing. The thing about Brooklyn that was good was it was diverse. You know, you had, you know, Caribbean, Afro-Latino, you had Asian, you had everybody in one space. But to get into a space where we were a small town, but you immediately learned the history of this town. Like, you were not graduating from Longside Public School. Forget the standardized test. If you didn't know that we used to be called Snow Hill, Free Haven, and Peter Mahouse down the street, like, you needed to know, like, we had rites of passage, like, yes. you know, our teachers were Black. The majority of our teachers were Black. Like, you know, teachers of other races were the minority. Like, you know, that's not life. That's not what people grow up with. And I didn't really realize how much of a gift that was.
I didn't appreciate it right now, but I would not trade it for anything. Mm-hmm. I would not trade being from Longside. I would not trade going to the school system. Like, it really became a part of me and what I do today and how I talk. I wouldn't trade it at all. I didn't appreciate it back then. Miss Higgs, wouldn't trade them for nothing.
Say something. If you wasn't doing nothing, you was watching Roots.
Yes. Listen,
they never get to finish it though. We always get to start it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so as far as celebrating, so I have the honor of being on the Black Law Student Association at my law school. So we got to run events throughout the month. We did a Black law panel where we just had, it was a Black female law panel. So it was Black mm-hmm. women who were practicing attorneys. We did some stuff around healthcare, you know, just encouraging the Black community to go to therapy and like the art of choosing a therapist and all that kind of stuff. And then we just ended yesterday with the Ask a Law Student panel, because in conversation with ourselves, we realized like many of us got to law school almost by accident. Like, it was like figuring it out along the way. It was like not really having examples of people who could tell you what to do, or the fact that you really should save to even apply to law school, because that's a reason why a lot of people aren't attorneys. Because, I mean, you got to buy a membership for this like technology that puts all of your application information together. That's over $200. The exam is over $200. Then you have to apply to each school. If you're lucky, the schools have waived their application fees, but to apply, you still have to pay a journaling fee for each school you're applying to, which ranges from $40 to $60 per application. So like, we're talking about serious money here. So we just put a panel together for people who are in high school or in undergraduates or adult learners who might be interested in it. To be able to ask questions about the process and like, you know, how to get started, what to do, what it's like to be a law student, you know, work-life balance, how it is to be like a minority in a space where you're a serious minority here. Like, you know, less than 5% of the population are Black attorneys, like of the population of attorneys are Black. That's deep. You know, we're almost 14% of the population, and we represent, and if you talk about Black female attorneys, we're talking even less. So, you know, it was kind of our goal to get people encouraged and to get them hopefully on the path of being attorneys, because, you know, the legal system is the great equalizer or unequalizer, depending on who you are. And, you know, not having a good attorney or not having prosecutors who are Black, who are in spaces of being able to decide, you know, criminal punishment and things like that. Like, it's just, you know, we were glad that we got to have that conversation with some young people of color. So
okay,
I know I celebrated. Great. Yeah, that's deep. Yes. Great to be back with you ladies. And we're back, y'all. You'll be able to see us every 2 weeks again. We're back on, you know, back by popular demand, maybe? I don't know. But we are back nonetheless, you know. One monkey don't stop no show, so to keep with it. But you can follow us on our social media platforms at BNZ Sisters with 3 S's on IG, And we are looking for people to help us with, you know, thinking of ideas and things to talk about. We want to hear from the people who listen to us. So if you do have an idea, please hit us up at BNZ Sistas, S-I-S-T-A-H-S-S-S at gmail.com. And all of our various social media platforms will be on here. So please feel free to follow us. We always, as usual, we're grateful for our listeners. We're thankful. And we will see you again next time.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.